Aquaman, swift and powerful monarch of the oceans, with ability to summon and command all creatures of the deep. Aquaman, who with his teenage ally, Aqualad, guards and defends all that lives in the seas against the forces of evil. Aquaman, king of the seven seas.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Whew. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to keep up with this weather, man. I keep thinking it's going to be cold, but like, hot, and I got dehydrated today, you know?
Oh, I love California weather. I mean, it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, really. People don't think that. They think like, oh, it never gets cold. I'm like, it does. It just plays tricks on you, especially, you know, like this time of the year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is people don't think it gets cold, but it doesn't get as cold as like New York or like, you know, Chicago, but it gets chilly. You know, it's not always like 90 degrees here. Although lately it seems like, what, 9 months out of the year, it's like 90 degrees.
Oh, yeah. It's overblown.
Yeah. But anyway, we are not here to talk about the weather.
No.
We're here to talk about the latest DC Comics, I don't know, DC Entertainment, DC Universe, straight-to-DVD, home video streaming, Blu-ray release called Justice League, Justice League Throne of Atlantis, which came out just last week. And first of all, let's start off by saying that this is part-time fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am here with Ian Scheller. Paul Edwards was going to join us, but he is sicker than a dog, so he can't be here. He has no voice. So either way, this is one of those releases that they've been coming out with. Like it's something like every 6 months or so, I think, that they come out with these. And this is the latest one. The one before this was Batman Assault on Arkham, which I actually found to be very good. But for me, a lot of these releases have been very like hit or miss.
Right.
Big time. Is this the first one that you've ever seen, Ian?
Let me see.
Like as far as like the straight to DVD, like home video release.
I've seen some. I think the last one I might have watched was the Red Hood.
Oh yeah, that's actually a really good one.
It is. Yeah. In general, I appreciate. I do like the animation style. I see it as a hybrid between kind of like the there's a Japanese elements in there.
Yeah, big time.
A lot of American elements too, which is cool. But
sure.
I do like the production value of these things. They do a lot of very cool practical animation tricks and moves, and I just tend to enjoy them in general. This one this one amused me on many different levels, and I was actually very excited that you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I was emailing with Corey, who hasn't been on the show in a while, and there's something about the DC animated stuff. I'm addicted to it. Like, I am seriously mm-hmm. addicted to these videos. I've bought every single one. And I don't know why. I have a need to buy them. I don't read, DC Comics anymore at all since, like, the New 52. But for some reason, like, these video releases, there's something about them that I can't even say that I love them, because some of them I've watched and I've just, Like, I've hated every Superman one. I've just been like, oh. Right. Well, I think the only one that I really, really enjoyed that was strictly Superman was the very first one they did, which was Superman Doomsday, which actually kind of did a less convoluted take on the death of Superman storyline than the actual comics did, you know, kind of mm-hmm. streamlined it a little bit. But, you know, for a long time, even though I wasn't crazy about them, for some reason I would buy them. And I think it's just because I'm kind of like a diehard animation fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think now when do you – there's definitely phases though within DC's animated releases because do you remember when Batman, they released the – what was the name of this movie? It was Batman. It was the Grim – like the Grim Reaper character.
Oh, like they didn't do year two, did they?
It wasn't year two, but it was influenced by that character and it actually saw theatrical release. It was
Mask of the Phantasm.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so way before this.
That's way before this stuff. And then they did – I remember buying Batman versus Superman – and watching that with a bunch of college buddies back in the day, and we love that because the animation was clearly geared towards older, people, and the characters would do edgier stuff and do more violent stuff.
They wouldn't go crazy.
Wouldn't go crazy, but I mean, it's become, I think, even more violent. But there, I guess my point was is that there was a time where DC sort of said, okay, let's make these sort of coming from the same place, right? A lot of these releases have been just coming from the same – they have the same sort of production value. They're consistent on a certain level, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. If you want to go way back, I mean, it all starts with the Batman Animated Adventures, right?
Right.
And that's Bruce Timm and, That was sort of the thing that sort of put like DC animation as far as like superheroes is concerned on the map, right?
Right.
And
right.
Bruce Timm and Paul Dini get a lot of credit for that as well as they should, and a whole bunch of other people that you know like revolutionized you know mm-hmm. American animation with that show. Now that show becomes really successful, right? And of course, who's the other sort of big superhero on the block is Superman, right?
Right?
So they do a Superman animated series, which for the most part, me being a Superman fan, was really, really, really solid. You know what I mean? I mean, just like you said, and they probably did the best, you know, media crossover of Superman, Batman that you're ever going to see, despite you know, what's coming down the line. I mean, honestly, I would love to find a way to rent out a movie theater on the weekend that Superman Batman opens or like the month and screen that Batman versus Superman thing and be like, don't go see that. Come and see this.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think it was called The World's Finest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it was part of the Superman TV show. So, I'm not exactly positive, but it may have even been a crossover between, because the Superman Batman show was, they were kind of like the Batman show was coming to its end.
Yeah.
And the Superman show was kind of just starting. So they were kind of like dovetailing into each other. And,
I see.
And it was a 3-part episode thing where they kind of crossed over and you had that whole like Lex Luthor and Joker teaming up.
Right. I don't want to go too far into it because we are going to talk about Aquaman, but I remember the Joker, they did like took out his eyeballs or something.
Gosh,
for
I
that.
Can't remember. It's been
like
a
while. They drew him very different.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the style. Yeah.
Very strange. Yeah. Like he was like black and white almost.
Well, that's the thing is that they changed the design. Like I think maybe after the first season of Batman Animated, they kind of, or the second season, they changed the design of the whole show and kind of like thinned out the lines, simplified some of the character designs. And the Joker, I remember kind of like being disappointed with that design, but you still, those eyes that they did, you're absolutely right. They were kind of crazy.
They were nuts.
Yeah,
It was a very bold choice. And I mean, speaking of bold choices, I think in this Aquaman movie, there were some definitely there were some bold choices being made.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean I think this is sort of like a direct sequel to Justice League War, which came out last year at some point. And I remember renting that one because I was sort of like still, you know, and I still am on my DC 52, give Superman back his underpants thing, yes. You know, the new 52. I'm very anti that whole thing. But, you know, I ended up buying Justice League War used because I liked it enough where I was like, okay, I'll add this to my library. You know, I've become a little bit of a completist as far as like the DC animation stuff is concerned. And that's the thing is like, yeah, there's a lot of bold choices and you can see that they're, that, you know, these things are PG-13. Although I don't know that this one needed to be PG-13, but I think that might be a little bit of an over, like maybe them... I almost feel like they asked for a PG-13 to be like, hey guys, just give us the PG-13 so that kids will think we're cool and like worth watching, you know, because did you feel like that this was PG-13?
I couldn't tell what I was watching at points. I mean, it was to me, I thought the violence went from like serious, like intense, you know, violence with blood to like completely goofy stuff. You know, like just like out of nowhere. And I know we'll get into details once we get into the story. But rating wise, when I watch an animated thing, and maybe because I am an anime fan, a Japanese anime fan, I'm never thinking anything's out of bounds or inbounds when it comes to animation. I'm actually just looking to the story because pretty much any sort of animation, even if I don't like it, I really appreciate it.
I'm the same way.
You know, I don't know what house they're using for this animation or who's keyframing.
I think they come out of Korea, to tell you
right.
The honest.
I'm assuming they are sending it out to Korea, which is fine, you know. To me, it was the story that I was laughing out loud at this movie. Several times.
In a good way or a bad way?
Just in like, this is ridiculous. Like,
it surprised you, or
it surprised me. It kind of, there was, I thought there were some very just goofy things in
there's
there.
There's definitely some goofy stuff.
I mean, even just to start it off, where it starts with this, you know, pretty, I guess formulaic is an okay word, but you know, there's a submarine scene and we're going to set up, you know.
Yeah, don't you feel like, okay, so we could start off and, you know, talk about the story. I mean, it very much opens up with sort of Hunt for Red October,
right?
You know, like submarine, like the whole thing that I feel about this, it's really like, the first thing is that this is like Jeff Johns, who's like, I think he's like creative director at DC, you know, Warner Brothers or whatever. Like he's a very famous comic book writer.
Yes.
And he's actually a pretty good, like a lot of the stuff that I've read of his, I've really liked. I can't say that I hunt down like all his stuff, but what he's really good at, what he specializes at is taking characters that people think are goofy and dumb making them, you know, quote unquote cool, which, you know, this Throne of Atlantis is an adaptation of a story that I believe he did in Justice League. And so,
he had a good run on Green Lantern.
Yeah, he had a really good run on Green Lantern, and he had a really, the one thing that made me really appreciate him, he did a decent run on Action Comics, I think, with Superman for a while. And I was like, wow, he did a really good job. And yeah, I've read a certain amount of his Green Lantern stuff. I've read some Superman stuff. And so, I mean, you get the feeling that, okay, this is the thing, we're trying to make Aquaman cool, you know.
Right.
And
right.
Because everyone, there's even, you know, what's really funny is that I have a couple of the Super Friends DVDs, you know, from like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
and there's commentary from like guys like Paul Dini, and I think Jeff Johns is on an episode. And I remember watching the commentary and like everyone's like trashing Aquaman. Mm. And I think Jeff Johns is like the only one kind of like sticking up for him. He's like, come on, guys. He like talks to the fishes and stuff. Like, that's kind of cool.
Right.
Like, you know, they're all like laughing and just trashing Aquaman. So that's like the first thing. The second thing about this, which you kind of like are saying like formulaic, I get a very sort of like Michael Bay you know, sort of feel.
Oh yeah, that's a great, that's a great reference. And because I felt that way too, I'm like, oh, we're going into this kind of thing, and I'm like, all right, you know, let's just let it play out.
Yeah.
Quickly to mention though, the Geoff Johns thing, what he did so well, I thought, on Green Lantern, and of course I was reading these as a you know, a youngster, but I thought he humanized Green Lantern so well, because the Hal Jordan character at that point in the run was so depressed, and I was actually wanting the Green Lantern movie to be that sort of Hal Jordan, which is just very human, not some just cocky wahoo, but a guy who's actually dealing with human problems, and you could kind of see that those themes sort of being, at least, you know, trying to be injected into the movie. But you know, this submarine sequence, instantly I start laughing because, you know, the guy's looking at the radar and the guy's like, Captain, we have some, you know, things coming in. Now, the captain, just the way they drew it or whatever, he leans, he puts his face like into this guy's radar. And I'm thinking, this guy's an awful boss. Like, I mean, like, he's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm like, what? I'm like, man, I'm like, let your guy take care of it.
You're so funny. You're like laughing at the micromanaging of the captain on the sub.
Exactly. I just started laughing immediately. And I'm like, man, this captain is serious. Like, almost overacting by the anime.
Well, and that's the thing, is that this is the weakness that I think that you know, I think that a lot of these DCU things, these current ones, they take a big cue from anime, and that they do a really good job, like with the coloring and you know, the visual aspect of it. But there's a stiffness to the characters that they can't seem to get past, like in a lot of them, not all of them, but especially in this one, Justice League War, maybe Flashpoint. Like, there's a bunch of them that Flashpoint being one of my favorites of the last couple. But, you know, there's like a stiffness to the acting. And I think that's what you're seeing there, is that they're just like, look, like, the guy's got to really lean in. You know what I mean? So it seems like, that didn't stand out to me, but I could see how it could stand out to you, where it's like, you know, some animation, and not particularly great animation, will have their characters like overdo things. You know what I mean? To justify the movement. Right. And, I could see where that was a little much, but yeah. So, I mean, the sub gets attacked. It's like a very mysterious thing. And there's like that whole like scene at the end of the attack, because there's a guy in the sub who's like looking at a picture of his kid playing with like Justice League action figures.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that's my boy. He loves the Justice League. And at the end of the attack, after the sub gets like sort of sunk, there's a picture, that picture comes floating into the foreground. Like, isn't that sad that this guy died? You know
it
what
is
I mean?
Sad.
Yeah. So then, you know, from there, you're going to, you're introduced to like Steve Trevor, right? Who's basically Wonder Woman's, you know, in the old comics, the love interest. But in this book, he's sort of like, in this movie, he's sort of like the liaison to the Justice League, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then
you're sort of reintroduced to Cyborg through like a nightmare that he has.
I thought that was great.
That was a pretty good touch. I like that too.
You know, it's been done a million times, but I thought the way they did it was actually really cool. He's like, I don't want to wake up now, and I don't know. Is this just really well done? I mean, we've seen it before, but I like. They made it seem fresh, and they pretty much show that Cyborg's there, pretty much kind of taking care of an empty office as they're trying to get the Justice League to be a thing. But it seems that a lot of the members don't want to show up.
Yeah, like they're not very interested in sort of like joining up together. You know, some of the personalities don't get along. You know, so a lot of them have their own thing, which is kind of it's kind of left over from the 80s, because there was definitely a run of the Justice League that were sort of like also-rans, and it was because like the big guys were like, I've got my own problems, right? You know, and that's because like a lot of the creators on those books didn't want to have to answer to some Justice League writer where they were trying to develop their own thing. But I mean, I thought that was the thing, and this is the thing with the New 52, is that the books, that they kind of like shoehorned Cyborg into the Justice League.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm such a purist. Like, I love him as one of the Teen Titans. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so seeing Cyborg there, it does get on my nerves. And it's just such a thing to be like, look, we've got to have a Black Justice League member.
Well, I think that is something. And there was also something that really came up in this movie. Down the road, there's a major scene about it in the flick. But I really think they put their stamp on Aquaman by saying, look, he's not gay.
What? Really?
Well, by having that kissing sequence with that lady. Because there was always the kind of open-endedness to Aquaman.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, I've always heard that, like, kind of just be this sort of weird rumor that, like, oh, you know, Aquaman's
really?
Gay. And, like, you know,
that.
At this point, it doesn't matter.
I've heard that about everyone, like Batman,
right, you hear,
Superman.
Right, sure, sure. Yeah, but yeah. I almost feel like it's like they gave him this kind of, sequence, like, in the middle of the movie where it's like, hey, now Aquaman's kissing a girl. He's not gay. Jeez.
Well, that whole thing is part of his – that's definitely part of his mythology that they stuck with, like, the Mera love affair. Like, that actually in the comics, I believe, ends up being his wife. So that's kind of like the thing there. I mean, I never heard the whole like gay, but like either way, it's like part of me is like, why not just use John Stewart as like the Green Lantern if you must have, you know, which you should have. You should have a Justice League member who is at least not white. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's a good point because even I was talking to someone, even slating the Cyborg movie, I'm like, really? You're going to give this guy his own movie? But it's like, the last in the run. If they make it that far, they'll give Cyborg a movie. But it's like, as a supporting character, I think, you know, actually in the movie, I thought he was actually well used.
I don't disagree with that.
And the character was great. I thought the voice actor is actually pretty good for Cyborg.
Actually,
very likable.
It's funny because like I will definitely be able to admit that it's my own like sort of bias thing that is very much like, oh, I want Cyborg to be a Teen Titan. Or at least if he's going to join the Justice League, it's not just that he like joined he was like one of the founding members. It's like, oh, he was part of the Teen Titans and then he joined the Justice League. You know, it's just the nerd, the fanboy in me that's like, no, this is the way it should be. Right. And it's like, no, man, you know, it's like, all right, whatever. This is like a whole new thing, you know?
Yeah, I got excited. I thought, I'm like, oh, am I going to see Nightwing as well? Because why wouldn't he be there?
Yeah, why wouldn't he show up?
You know?
Exactly.
And I think it's almost like Nightwing can be Batman's like substitute. So if Batman can't make it, he calls Nightwing.
Yeah, exactly.
So Cyborg's there. He's trying to do his best. Yeah.
And then we get a little interlude with Wonder Woman and Superman.
Here's where I crack up again, though. Here's where I lose it, actually.
Yeah, go ahead.
I laughed harder than I did with the overbearing boss on the submarine.
Yeah.
They're looking out across, I guess, Metropolis?
No, they were in Greece. They were in Athens.
Oh, they're hanging out in Greece. Okay. And what? This is the short end of it, but Wonder Woman's sad. Superman basically says, let me show you what I do when I'm sad. And he flies. He flies up with her into the atmosphere and just makes out with her. I mean, I'm like, hey, however you do it, however you get it done. And I'm thinking, why didn't I use that move back in the day?
Because you couldn't fly.
Yeah, because I couldn't fly. You know?
No, that's another thing. Is like, this is another nerd thing of me. Is like, with the new 52, they made like Superman and Wonder Woman a couple, and there's so many people that are like, oh, that's logical, don't you see, they're both, you know, they're both like super beings and they should, you know. And and for me it's like John Byrne, one of my favorite artists and writers, like back in the day, kind of tackled the Superman Wonder Woman thing like in the 80s, and he basically, you know, was like, look, he's from a farm in Smallville and he's very grounded in Earth. And she's like from like Greek mythology and an island of the Amazons. They just don't have like that much in common. You know what I'm saying? Where they wouldn't get along. And I remember reading that as a teen and thinking like, that makes sense, you know? So the Superman Wonder Woman thing, like, I get it. There's a part of my fanboy genetic DNA that's like, that's so great. But, you know, there's also a part of me that's sort of like, you know, Superman Lois Lane, right? You know,
yeah.
But, you know, it's a nice touch. The thing that I have to say is that I loathe the design of this Wonder Woman outfit. Like, I cannot stand it. I think it is the
interesting.
Ugliest take on a Wonder Woman outfit that I've ever seen, and I don't know why they keep using it, because it doesn't have to be like the Linda Carter thing, but right. Come on, there's got to be a better design.
How does this design relate to the Wonder Woman movie they've just released recently, the anime?
I mean, it doesn't look similar. I mean, I don't think it does.
Which one was better?
Are you talking about, the animated movie?
Yeah.
The animated movie was the classic costume.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you haven't seen that yet?
No.
We should talk about that one on a future episode, okay. Because that is just like basically almost like a template for what you could do with a live action. It's like they should have just made this, you know, into a live action,
right.
You know, but that's just one of my complaints. You know, I also hate the Superman costume, but that's me. I know everyone else is like, I know. So then from there you get to the Aquaman lobster chat, right? Aquaman is talking to a lobster. Right?
I actually, that whole scene from beginning to end really pulled at my heartstrings.
pulled at your heartstrings?
Well, yeah, he's talking to the lobster. He's sad. And I mean, this brings up the whole thing, though. You know, in this scene where Aquaman basically, he's drunk, he gets in a bar fight, right?
Yes.
But this brings up the whole powers issue of Aquaman.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know Namor from the Marvel Universe, if he stays close to the water and he's in the water, he's extremely strong. Strong enough to take on the Hulk.
Yes, he's pretty strong, yeah.
All right, if he's out of water, he gets a little weaker and weaker and weaker. But with Aquaman, has there ever been like a solid stance on his powers?
Let's admit it. You know, Aquaman from the beginning has been kind of a ripoff of Namor, right? And and maybe not in the beginning. He was sort of like a milquetoast version of Aquaman, like a very like white bread, like, hi, I'm Aquaman. Where, you know, Namor has always been like temperamental, angry guy. You know what I mean?
He's
been a bad guy and he's been a good guy, you know?
Right.
And Aquaman was sort of like DC's like, I'm pretty sure that Namor came first, you know, but Aquaman.
I think he did. He was like the first anti-hero for Marvel.
Yeah.
One of their biggest.
The Human Torch, yeah.
Exactly. One of their biggest sellers.
Yeah. And so, and then as through the years, you know, the Aquaman template has sort of adopted the Namor, like, I'm angry at the surface dwellers for what they're doing to the ocean, blah, blah, blah. And look, I'm hard and I'm a badass. And, you know, and so, you know, they've definitely tried to do that. Now, as far as like how strong Aquaman is, I mean, he's always been strong. But, you know, the explanation was that like all Atlanteans were stronger than surface people, right? Because, you know, they had to live underwater and the pressure of like living deep under the sea and all that stuff, you know? So, I mean, Aquaman's always been stronger. How strong is he? Well, I mean, I think it's always been established that he's strong enough to pick up, you know, a big dude and throw him, like, you know, which was one of the coolest scene in the fight where he picks up the guy and just throws him like way, way out into the ocean, right?
Oh, he launched that guy.
But see, this whole scene raises a much more serious question to me than his powers, which is, what does Aquaman eat? I mean, if he can talk to fish and he lives under the ocean, aren't we talking about like eating like some sort of cannibalism? I mean, he's not eating Atlanteans or humanoids, but he's like, does he talk to the tuna before he eats it? Like, or does he just eat algae? Is he like a strict vegetarian? Like,
I don't.
What is
ate,
the deal with?
No, he did not.
He saved
anything.
The lobster. No, but he doesn't.
He didn't even eat in this movie at all.
No. But I'm saying, like, to me, the question is, if he's able to talk to a lobster, and I would imagine that lobster gets eaten by Atlanteans too, because that's underwater, right? They have to eat.
Sure.
So what? can he eat? I guess he's just a strict vegetarian. He's eating algae, seaweed.
Well,
right?
I mean, if a lobster's dead, he can't talk to it. He can eat the
no,
lobster.
But I mean, what does he find dead lobster? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you serve me up dead Ian, it's still gross. I'm not going to eat it, right?
You're saying like he's too much like the lobster to eat it?
Well, yeah, he talks to them. He has conversations.
You could talk to a chicken and then eat the chicken.
No, but the chicken doesn't talk back.
You don't know that. I mean,
I'm pretty sure. Understand it if it does.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I mean, I never, honestly, it never even occurred to me.
What I'm saying. It's occurring to me. That's what makes the scene, like, it's supposed to be like a cute little scene. And I'm watching this and I'm going, wait, he's talking to lobster. He lives in the ocean. He talks to fish. He relates to the things that he eats. That's kind of fucked up.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I think that is... that is pretty crazy. I mean, they didn't really dwell on it though, because that fight went on forever.
It was a good fight. Yeah, that was a good fight. That was There's, I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm dwelling on like the whole thing is like it's just supposed to be a fight and blah blah blah. And it was a good, but then for me, I'm still
that's
thinking
funny
about...
though that stuck out to you because like other other things stuck out to me, but you got. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he is a vegetarian, but you would think he's raised as a boy. I mean, his dad's probably feeding him hot dogs and hamburgers.
Yeah,
and,
well, they're not fish, but at some point he's going to go live in the ocean. What's he going to eat? What's he going to eat in the ocean? Is he going to take like a carton of hamburgers with him, like from the surface world?
Yeah, I mean, the guys, he's going to have to do as the Atlanteans do.
Yeah, which we'll see. Well, anyway, moving on, because we could talk about that for like a whole hour.
Oh, yeah.
So Cyborg goes to investigate the submarine. Now, okay, talking about things that stick out.
Here
we go. You know what I'm going to say, right?
I know. Go for it.
Well, he talks about how he made the adjustment of getting rid of the lung, but he has no faceplate protecting his human eye and his human face. From
just,
the water, and he's
just,
like under the ocean.
Just the whole thing about electricity.
Oh, well, that too,
The electric robot swimming through the water is amazing to me.
Well, don't you figure, I mean, he's got to be waterproof, right? I would imagine, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I was just like, come on, you're telling me he's watertight?
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. For me, I was more thinking about the human parts of his body that were like exposed, and I'm like, his face would just crumble under the pressure, like, and his eye, his left, his human eye would just be like open in salt water. Like, it doesn't work. Like, they didn't even think to like, hey, let's just give him a faceplate. You know, it's just like, we have to show that it's Cyborg. And I'm like, well, but you can tell because the rest of his body. Anyway, like, that was the thing that
didn't
I was.
He have like a little mask on, a little rebreather.
He
like,
had it over his mouth, but not
right.
Over
that
his
was it.
Face.
No, that was the only.
And I'm like,
protection.
Sorry, dude, that's not going to work. Especially a sub that sunk in the bottom of the ocean. Whatever. So this is the Michael Bay aspect of things. Where it's like, this is definitely not enough thought has been put into this movie to, you can make these little tweaks where it's like, you wouldn't even think about that. But, and that's where it's like a Michael Bay movie. Like, hey, this is stupid. Why didn't you just fix that one thing? And then I wouldn't be thinking about it and focusing on it so much.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking like his face would cave in, but whatever, it's a cartoon, right? That's the excuse. Yeah. But that's not my excuse, because this is supposed to be like a serious cartoon. Anyway, the other thing is he goes into the sub, right?
Yeah.
And he accesses the security footage and it still works and he can watch it. Like,
I was thinking, I'm like, man,
he's looking at the screen. The screen still works.
No, that was funny too, because I'm thinking like, God, there's Thunderbolt, Firewire, USB, SCSI, analog connectors, like all sorts of XLR, quarter inch cables. I'm like, he's got the one cable that works with this sub. And I'm like, that's pretty awesome.
Beyond that, it's the fact that he can turn on the monitor in a sub that's sunk. And he can look at the monitor through the seawater and like see everything clearly. I was just like,
I was actually thinking about the scientists when they were making him. They're like, we'll give him this universal skeleton key connector. It will connect to any device on any vehicle, on any computer, everywhere. That's how I accepted it, though. I'm like, wow, they built him right.
Well, for me, it was like turning on a TV in a sub, and I was, and that you can watch it like you're watching it in your living room. I was like, nah,
absolutely.
That's not gonna
work. If he turned just one dial over, he would have got like the Howdy Doody show.
Yep. Exactly. It was perfect cable reception. No, I mean, the recordings are fine. Everything's fine. Yeah. Everything's great. Preserved. So whatever. He gets assaulted. We don't know what it is. He escapes in a boom tube, which apparently that they've, you know, because this is a sequel to Justice League War, they've apparently like taken the Apocalypse, because that's what the whole thing is. It's Darkseid and Justice League War. They've taken that technology and figured out how to use it for themselves. You get a little glimpse of Aquaman sort of at home, right? He's hanging out, feeling sad because nobody understands him. A picture of his parents, right? And then cut to Cyborg and Shazam, as Shazam and Flash show up at the Justice League headquarters. And, you know, they're all like, hey, like, what's up? Like, what are we doing here? Like, why did you... And to me, the biggest thing with Shazam was that he was kind of an asshole. Like, I understand that he's a kid inside the body, but he's like, now he's this like wise ass, like...
Why was he there, though? Is he in the Justice
League? Yeah, he's in the Justice League, man. Come on, get with it.
From the beginning? No, was he ever in the Justice League?
Oh, yeah. Oh, in the comics or like just...
In the comics.
Oh, yeah, big time. And he was in Justice League War, too. He was sort of the sub for Aquaman in Justice League War.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm always so confused about that character, partly because I've read so much about... the copyright battles
that.
So, but he kind of grew on me throughout the movie, and they didn't spend so much time on him. I love the way they used the Flash, actually.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, for comedic timing and just where Flash needed to be in that movie, I'm like, every time Flash was on, I loved it. And I just love Flash.
Yeah. And so this definitely becomes a sequence where it's like the gathering of the League. And he goes and gets Green Lantern, who, like, this is the one big thing that bugged me in the whole movie, is that Green Lantern talks like a teenage boy. Like, he says, what? And he's like, yo, bro. And I'm like, Hal Jordan doesn't talk like that. And even if he did, like, the delivery was all off. Like, and every time he talked like that or was trying to be like, I'm like, I get that you're trying to get teenagers in, but, like, Green Lantern's like a test pilot. He doesn't walk around going like, what the what?
And they, like, still, to bro, me, they still haven't hit that character. I thought they were still trying to do like Ryan Reynolds stuff. Which is a shame.
Weird?
Which is a shame, because it's like, look, that's not, I know some people did enjoy that Green Lantern.
Nobody enjoyed it.
But, you know, that's not, obviously not the way to go. So just, can you just give us what we need, which is a legitimate, mature Hal Jordan who might still have a drinking problem? I mean,
that's great.
And that's, you know, that's kind of what my bone to pick, I guess, was on more on the Batman side, where we get almost the Christian Bale type Batman voice, where I wasn't really into that Batman. I liked what he was saying, just didn't really like the voice they picked.
Yeah, I wish they would get, what's his face, the guy from the animated series, like, they've brought him back a lot.
I mean, not knocking the voice actor, but I'm not into the whole, I'm like, hey, the Bale thing's done, let's move on from it. And he doesn't need to be that kind of...
Well, that was another voice characterization that I didn't like. I didn't like the Batman. I just felt like it wasn't dark enough, or it wasn't loose enough. Like, the guy was too stiff in his delivery. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just like one of the Batman characterizations where a lot of actors have done him in these movies.
Right.
And you're just not going to be, you know, the guy from the animated series whose name is like escaping me right now. But yeah, you just can't beat. So just throw money at the guy and have him do Batman. Like, really. So like they gather the League, Green Lantern captures, that was the thing, is like Green Lantern captures the Scarecrow gang, you know, because that's where he finds Batman in pursuit of Scarecrow's gang.
I enjoyed that. I love the Scarecrow gang.
Yeah. No, I like that. Great. But that was the thing. Like, he's talking to Batman and he's like, yo, bro, I totally caught, and I'm like, is this like Keanu Green Lantern? Like, no, he doesn't. No, he doesn't talk like that. Stop that. Stop
right.
that. So
right.
yeah, that bugged me. But then we got to another really good scene, which I really liked, which was the Wonder Woman and
yeah.
Superman
right.
in the diner, like with the glasses thing.
It was like, a great scene.
I thought that was a really nice, like, little bit of like character development.
Right.
Even though like I'm not crazy about them like being in a relationship together, it was really cool, like where she's like, oh, these glasses work, and you know, and then Lois shows up and there's kind of a little bit of jealousy there, and mm-hmm. you know, she's kind of like assuming like, oh, it's not really a date, and Wonder Woman just comes right out and is like, no, it's a date, like we're together, and it's just like, ooh, sticking it to her, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was really cool, like,
yeah.
like that whole scene was really neat, and I really love the whole like thing where she says like, oh, we're wearing glasses, you know, to hide among them, and he's like, no, it's more like being, you know, one of them, or like
right,
being a part
right.
of them. I thought that was really cool. It's interesting how like they've sort of set up this relationship between Superman and Wonder Woman where, you know, I don't know if this is chauvinistic, but where he's like the teacher, like showing her man's world. And
well,
like,
right. That, and that's what cracked me up about, hey, when I get sad, here's what I do. It's like, wait a minute. You fly into the sky by yourself and make out with yourself? Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's what I found so funny about that sort of kind of thing where it's like, hey, I'll just show you what I do and molest you. I mean, like, what? I mean, I just, yeah. So in a way, yeah, that tone was kind of there where it's like, I'm Teacher Superman. And it's like, whoa,
yeah.
that's Wonder Woman, dude. You don't need to teach her anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But the scene was still good. I did like it. Yeah,
it was a nice little character scene that I thought was pretty well written.
It's great.
So at that point, you get back to the Aquaman lighthouse, and the Justice League goes to analyze the sub.
Right, they do the playback on what Cyborg's recorded,
and apparently Cyborg records in like 3D, so he can record.
Oh yeah, man!
Like
surround
everything
sound.
In the room.
It was prime. I was like, okay, yeah, I just accepted that and moved on.
Yeah, Green Lantern even recognizes. Even says like, oh, it's like watching a 3D movie without the 3D glasses. You know?
Yeah, they did give Green Lantern a lot of hokey lines.
Oh
just,
man, yeah.
Hey, Green Lantern, shut up.
Yeah, shut up.
But I think, you know, for the most part, I that was kind of cool. I mean, you know, it was weird because in some ways Batman would wind up, people would be like, hey, what's this? What's this? And Batman would be like, this is what we're doing. We're
yeah.
doing it now. And Superman makes the joke of like, hey, did someone name him our leader?
Yeah, exactly. The thing is you hit the nail on the head. And that's my problem with sort of Batman and all these things. It's like he's the only one that they make it seem like he's thinking of anything, you know, like where the others are just standing around, you know what I mean? And you're absolutely
yeah.
right. It's like they're all analyzing this video, you know, which is why I was very thankful of another scene later in the movie, which we could talk about once we get to it, where Superman and Batman are kind of investigating something together. And
right.
there's a couple of really good lines there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But then we cut to Atlantis, right? We
mm-hmm.
finally get to Atlantis. And at this point, you're sort of introduced to Black Manta and Orin, who is Aquaman's. And they never call him Arthur Curry, do they? Yeah, they do. They do, right?
Oh, Aquaman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They call Aquaman by his name.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so you're introduced to Black Manta and Orin, who is Prince of Atlantis and is Aquaman's half-brother. And at this point, and then you are introduced to Aquaman's mother, who is the Queen of Atlantis, right?
Right.
right. And so in this dialogue, you basically get like what's happening at this point, which is Orin is like a spoiled brat and he's pissed off at his mom and he's ticked off at the surface world and he wants to start a war with the surface world. And the mother's like, why? You know, there's no real reason for it. You know what I mean? And so Black Manta is sort of like the little bug in Orin's ear who's like, come on, don't you want to invade the surface world? So that sort of thing, right?
I yeah.
Sort
and
of
I wish,
Lady Macbeth.
Right. And I wish we got more background on Manta.
Yeah, me too.
And he really is
a badass looking character.
I liked it. He's a complete poser. He's basically a human just hanging out.
That's what, I'm totally with you. Like, who is this guy? Like, how does he start hanging out with the Atlanteans?
Right, and complete poser. And I just wish we had a little bit more as to his motivation because, you know, as we find out later, he pretty much says, it's like, hey, this is all my doing.
Yeah, exactly.
But I did like it. You know, it's like, wait a minute. I think, you know, who's pulling the strings here? Who's doing what? And you sort of, you know, instantly you want Aquaman's half brother to just be dead.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
he's just a spoiled brat. And
I like how they gave the mom the lines, how just call them out and be like, listen, you're ridiculous. Just shut up. You're not getting the staff. You know, you're not getting the super trident. Just shut up and stop trying to cause trouble.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And at this point, you also get the revelation that the queen has been looking for Aquaman, her son.
Right.
You know,
right.
Mera, it was revealed like after the fight that Aquaman's been being followed by two sets of people. One is a doctor who's obsessed mm-hmm. with Atlantis, and the other is this woman, Mera, who is a citizen of Atlantis.
Right.
You know, quick note about Mera, whenever she used her, like, because it becomes revealed that she's able to sort of, like, control water and, like, form stuff out of water. But whenever she did it, they would sort of use, like, a version of the old Aquaman sound effect from, like, the Justice League or the old 60s cartoons. I can't remember, where it was sort of like, whoop, 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 whoop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it was I thought that was really neat. I was like, oh, good callback. You know what I mean? It wasn't super overt, but it was there enough to be like, oh, I'm a nerd. I watched way too many episodes of Super Friends when I was a kid.
I thought they did great with her character. I loved when she threw a bunch of icicles.
Oh, yeah.
Through those aliens. I was like, that was, I mean, just completely... I mean, again, I'm like, this, I don't know what this is rated, but this is pretty violent.
That's funny. So you get a flashback of Aquaman when he was a little kid
mm-hmm.
and he goes into the water and he sees his mother for the first time. And he comes out and he's like, Dad, I saw mom. And his dad is like, your mom left us. She's a whore. You know,
pretty much.
Yeah. He's like, she left us and she's not coming back. And he's sad. Sad little Aquaman. And then at this point in the movie is when Dr. Shin is revealed to have been sort of in league with Black Manta, but not really knowing that Black Manta is evil. You know what I mean? He's just basically a son. Like, I didn't get the feeling that this doctor was evil or bad, right? Like, did you get that feeling?
No, I thought he was just doing research, and I guess that's where, I mean, it seemed though Manta already knew where Atlantis was, didn't he?
Yeah, Manta knew where Atlantis was.
But he didn't know where Arthur was.
Yeah, I guess he didn't know where Arthur was, but you never really find out how Manta found out about Arthur. I would imagine that the queen... You know, because at one point there is a flashback where, or there is an explanation where Mera says to Aquaman, like, this is your history. You know, you never get, like, why did the queen leave Atlantis? Like, was she not want to be queen? Did she not want to marry the king? I mean, they sort of insinuate that she didn't love the king, but you don't get the reason why she left Atlantis. And then you don't really get the reason about why she went back and left her family, who she supposedly loves so much, you know?
Right.
There's a whole backstory in there that isn't really kind of talked about, and you kind of have to just take it on its face, right? Say like, okay, well, this is kind of what happened. But Dr. Shin eventually visits Aquaman, Arthur Curry, and is like, hey, man, I know all about you. I know your history. I can fill you in, because at this point, you know, Arthur Curry, Aquaman, doesn't know anything about his history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Shin gets killed immediately.
He's gone. He's just finished.
Yep. And then the soldiers attack, Atlantean soldiers, who are, like you said, these guys look badass. Like, the design of the creatures and the soldiers in this movie are fantastic. And I think, like, the design of Aquaman's costume was terrific. It's like, to me, it was like he was the one that they put the most thought into. You know what I mean? Obviously, because Aquaman's costume has always been kind of stupid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was perfect, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So at the same time that Aquaman's being attacked and rescued by Mera, there's a submarine attack on Atlantis. And were you clear on what submarine this was? Was this the one that was sunk? Did they just get a submarine? Oh no, it was Black Manta, right?
He had missiles. He had a ship.
It was his own ship. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, again, which I was like, man, this character is pretty interesting. But I'm like,
who is least developed?
Right. And who is this guy who wants to just hang out with evil Atlanteans?
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, he's human. I'm like, this guy's a freaking poser.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, you never get, like, why does he want to blow up Atlantis? It's just like, he's just sort of like a villain, like twirling his mustache. Like, I just, you know, there's no explanation for it whatsoever.
No, he's almost like a double spy in some ways. Yeah, it's really weird. He's just like out for his own sort of weird kicks, you know, but it's like, where's he getting his money from? Why is he doing this? It's like living a bipolar sort of reality, you know? What is his reality? We don't know. We never find out, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you see that attack, and then eventually what happens, Superman and Batman actually went to Dr. Shin's place, and this is where it's what I was talking about a little earlier. You have that scene where they're sort of interacting and it's like Superman's like, hey, man, I'm not like some idiot that you, which is what I really would love for people to realize that, you know, they even say it. Superman says like, hey, I'm an investigative reporter. Like, I'm like a detective too. Right. And I was like, finally, somebody said it. Like, it's not just like him. He's not like to just like playing a reporter. He is a reporter. He looks into stuff. He investigates stuff. So he finds like one of the clues that they need, which is a picture of Arthur Curry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, because the doctor has been investigating. And then I found this to be really funny. Did you clue in on this where basically like this scene has Batman basically using Cyborg as the bat computer?
I think, did he like logged into him or something?
Well, yeah, he was just like, he's like, Cyborg, analyze this piece of, okay, Batman, Cyborg, can you decode this letter for me? Okay, Batman, Cyborg. Instead of like in an old cartoon, you would have had him like calling the Bat Computer and been like, Bat Computer. So like in this scene, it's basically Batman using Cyborg as the bat computer.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, Cyborg's this tool. He's like this Swiss Army knife. And I think, you know, script-wise, they're like, hey, let's just tie it back into the team. So, you know, Batman's just going to rely on his teammates to help him out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Which, little peculiar, but I thought it worked.
Yeah, sure. Maybe he just needed him to do busy work. Maybe he just needed him to feel like he was wanted, you know?
Yeah, I think this was actually the middle section of the movie was actually my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
I loved all this stuff with them chasing, you know, and it kind of threw me a bit I thought actually Superman and Batman were just going to save Aquaman in the beginning, but
yeah,
I'm glad they put that extra thing in there with his, the girl saving Aquaman.
Yeah,
And then they're still, you know, working on their chase to figure out. You know, what's going on. Then they finally do. And eventually they do catch up to Aquaman.
Yeah. Well, eventually what you end up seeing is like the Atlanteans like react to the sub attack. Orin wants war. Queen is like, no. And she reveals that she knows that he's the one who kind of like sunk the sub and is trying to like cause all these machinations. And what does Orin do? He basically kills his mother.
Straight up.
Right. At the same time, Mera takes Aquaman to Atlantis at the first time he's ever been there and tells him about his heritage, which is basically that the Atlantean queen wanted to go on a Roman holiday and basically, you know, went to the surface world, got herself a baby daddy and had Arthur and then ran away on him. So yep. Basically, the queen had no sense of any kind of responsibility when she was growing up. She was just like sowing her wild oats.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And so basically, the sun kills her, and Aquaman dons the costume, you know. And meanwhile, you have a scene where Cyborg's trying to do some research, and he blows off the only women that would probably be interested in a human-sized vibrator. And, well, not the only woman. I'm sure there's a lot of women. But basically, you know, this woman's, like, showing interest in him. And it's like, dude, it's I don't think a guy like you has a lot of options at this point. You know, like, you're basically mostly a walking toaster. you know, and so you've got those scenes. And, you know, after this, it really sort of becomes... like, this is where the action kicks in, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like an all-out war. I mean, it gets very Shakespearean. I think...
the soldiers attack the Justice League.
Soldiers are attacking. I mean, I thought a lot about Thor as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just
they
with the sun. And
yeah.
There's a lot of that. But yeah, big war happening underground, under the water. And it seems like... the Atlanteans are just blindly following, you know.
Yeah. That was a point that was like in my head where I was like, what? Like, everyone's just like, no one questions him. You know, no one questions it.
Man, and,
like, who killed the queen? Yeah.
And Aquaman's coming in to meet his mom for the first time. And again, this kind of my heart kind of sunk here. Man, this is the first time he's going to get to be reunited. And she's not. She's not there.
Yeah, she's dead. She's dead because Orin killed her. And
now, is it at this point, do they call out Orin straight up on it? And he's like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, he totally does.
I actually really like that part because I was like, oh, he's just going to perpetuate the lie. But straight up, he's like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
Like, did that.
Well, did you catch the like sort of Christopher Walken like delivery where he was like, yeah, I killed my mother. Like
are you kidding?
Oh no, you gotta watch it again. Go back to that scene, and it's totally like I'm like, did they just stick like a Christopher Walken like? Because he's like, yeah, I killed her. I killed my mother. Like, and I was just like, wow. Like,
not catch that at
like,
all.
Like, it wasn't even subtle. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
So.
Catch that.
Yeah, and so like but it's really funny because at this point, you know, the whole big thing is like it's like the staff, the trident of Atlantis, right? Is
right.
What he was vying for, and it's this magical device that you're not really sure what it does, but it does a lot. And
yeah, I mean, it gave Superman internal bleeding.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he took out Superman with it. But that's the thing. It's magic. Superman's vulnerable
right.
to magic, right?
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, but he basically takes out the Justice League with this whole thing, launches a tidal wave towards Metropolis, and sends his whole invasion force to invade Metropolis. And at this point, right, there's another cool scene where they have to face off, like, against a giant... you know, he's captured like the Justice League. He leaves him in a death trap, you know, his first big mistake.
Basically throws him into the underwater Sarlacc pit.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. With this giant, which I thought was another really cool design. Like, I was like, wow, that's a really cool looking monster.
Yeah.
And Aquaman tries to do his, you know, like his controlling the giant squid with his brain. Doesn't work. No. So he's smart enough to, hey, you know what? I should go get that Superman guy out of his squid. And then you get like a really neat fight between Superman and a giant, like, sort of Pacific Rim-like monster.
It was very well choreographed.
It was cool. Like, my only problem with it was, like, you know, they're just so eager to prove, like, a gritty Superman. Like, he's basically cutting its limbs off with his heat vision.
He totally sliced it up.
And I'm like, Superman wouldn't do that. He would be like, this is just some dumb beast. I've just got to subdue it and take it out. Like, it doesn't have any ill will to me, right? right? Especially when he could throw it around like he did. He was punching it.
Yeah, in general, these superheroes, though, caused a lot of collateral damage. I mean, just that opening fight, we didn't even talk about how Aquaman basically, destroyed the bar, the dock.
Yeah.
And even there were some other scenes, I think, as the fight wore on into the city where I'm like, they're just destroying stuff.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But yeah, they took care of that monster pretty good. I remember being like, that was a cool scene. But where does the Aquaman, though, fitting into the armor? Does he try to get into the armor and then he's like, I don't want to wear this armor?
No, that's when Mera reveals his heritage and she puts it on him.
Right.
And he's like, I'm no king. He's like, yeah. I can't, which would be kind of your reaction if you were just some slacker
that talked
to lobsters in bars.
I felt like, though, he was shopping for a tuxedo he didn't want, and then he puts the thing on anyway. He's like, I don't, why am I doing, he's with a girl he doesn't understand why he's even with her.
And she's
like, hey, let's take you to the Von Dutch store. And then he's like I don't like this is not my style. And he's like putting it all on. He's like, oh, maybe I'll like it when it's on.
The
whole thing's on. He's like, no, I don't like it. And he takes it apart piece by piece.
What's interesting is, it looked cool. I was like, oh, that looks cool. And then he takes it off and he's got the orange shirt and stuff. And that still looked good. But I was like, damn, you look badass in that armor. You didn't look stupid, you know? So, I mean... Yeah, he definitely goes through a thing where it's like, it seems like all heroes have to do this, or at least modern heroes have to be like, no, I don't want to be the hero. And then he finds out his mom is dead and he's like, I'm going to kick some ass, and it's just sort of the very typical, superhero thing, right?
Right.
It can't just be like, dude, I'm the motherfucking king. You know what I mean? This is badass. He can't just embrace it from the get-go. And I understand he's a slacker who goes to bars and talks to lobsters. Maybe you need some motivation. I get it. So then they have the big fight in Metropolis, which is pretty cool. What bothered me, again, here we go, is another nerd. They take the time to kind of shoehorn in John Henry Irons, Steel.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
And who, call me whatever, is one of my most loathed DC Comics character of all time. It's like, really? The dude with the hammer and the armor? And I've just always hated Steel. So, I saw that scene and I was just like, eye roll. You know what I mean? I was just like, why? Why does this need to be in here? Are they going to put him in another movie? I don't want an animated Steel movie. Don't do it. So that kind of bugged me.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't know anything about that character besides the obvious stuff. And I like, though, when they add little tidbits like that, only because it kind of fills out the world. And it wasn't a huge... huge point in the movie. Like, that character didn't have a huge point in the movie.
It just bugged me.
Yeah.
I was just like, whatever. But that's just like my fanboy nitpick, And so then, which all leads up to the end, which is another, I kind of found it to be sort of the lamest, where it's like, he's talking, it was a Green Lantern or the Flash, like Batman. And he's like, tell me everything you know about Orin or whatever. And, and they're just like, he killed his mother. And Batman's the only one who's like, oh, Cyborg records everything. Cyborg thought about himself, the dude who records everything, in super 3D without glasses, is like, hey, I've got this recording of this dude killing the queen, saying that he killed the queen.
There was also, though, did you notice the tidal wave never crashed?
Yeah, I know, because Orin stopped it.
He stopped it to part the water to reveal his army.
And then he didn't do anything with it, yeah.
I mean, it would have totally favored them to douse the city.
Yes, yeah, I know, you're right.
But I almost feel like they're like somewhere in the budget, they're like, wait a minute, if we have this thing crash over the city, like, I almost feel like a budget concern where they're like, we can't have this whole thing happen underwater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, it was funny how Batman had to tell Cyborg, like, hey, guess what? You're a GoPro camera. And you record everything.
I know, exactly. Why don't you show the Atlanteans?
Yeah. I guess I am a GoPro. So yeah. And that's the stuff that would consistently, you know, every 10 or 15 or so minutes.
Michael Bay.
I would just crack up at the movie. And yeah. Can we talk too about the way Manta bit it?
Yeah.
This was like a death from like a Mortal Kombat video game or something. Like the strangest. To me, it was just strange, even though, you know, the shark was clearly summoned, but it was just like he's talking.
Oh, it's
like,
totally from that movie with Samuel L. Jackson. What is the shark movie with Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh.
I saw it in the theater.
I unfortunately did as well.
Yeah, and it was
Deep
Blue Sea. I saw that in the theater, and when that happened, I laughed my ass off, and it's such a callback to that movie. Yeah,
why would you call back that
movie? I don't know. Which it's really weird because Samuel Jackson is a black actor who gets jumped by a shark, and then in this movie, you know, Black Manta's like talking, and the giant shark just comes and like eats him, right? Like, and I just remember sitting there going, like, this is odd. Like, yeah.
I mean, the only thing that part didn't have was the LL Cool J song, My Head Is Like a Shark's Fin.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just started laughing out loud again, and I'm like, what the hell was that?
I couldn't even laugh. I was just sitting there thinking Deep Blue, like, I was thinking, that's the Samuel L. Jackson movie. Like, they just totally lifted that, and I don't know if it was supposed to be, like, humorous or... like, hey, isn't this clever? Or, you know what I mean? And, but it was just like, oh, that's kind of lame. And again, you're totally right. Like, Black Manta is kind of like a throwaway character, you know? Just kind of lame, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, what's his face? Darth Maul in, like, the Phantom Menace.
Oh, you have
this awesome-looking character. And so much potential for like villainy or whatever, and you just waste him. You don't talk anything about him. Like, if anything, you're looking at Black Manta and you're looking at Orin and you're looking at Black Manta and you're like, I want to know more about that guy, you know, and that's sort of like the biggest flaw with the villains, because it's like, yeah, spoil brat, shut up, blah, blah, whatever. I want to see that guy. Like, what is he going to do? And then he ends up being sort of like a throwaway character, which is too bad.
Yeah, I would have preferred he just lives and gets away somehow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly.
And maybe he did.
Yeah.
But
he cut his way out of the shark. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the last thing, though, that kind of cracked me up. After that, it was pretty much a standard go home.
Orin gets revealed. The Atlanteans turn on him. They're like, how dare you? You know, Mara's like, I saw him do it. You know, which, you know, you couldn't have said anything before. Like, nobody knows who this Mara woman is. Like, she couldn't have said anything and been like, he killed the queen. Like, there's none of that. Anyway, whatever. So this ends up being the event that kind of like solidifies the league, because they all go to Atlantis. They kind of like witness his coronation, and they're all like, yeah, maybe we should be a team. You know what I mean? Like, things are kind of getting crazier, you know? And then Aquaman's like, hey, guys, if you ever need me, you know, just come and I'll help out. You know what I mean? And they're like, all right, dude. And then, you know, Mara comes, and there's some trouble in the trench, and it's like these hybrid shark man creatures.
Yeah.
And then you get to see, they have to reveal like why Aquaman's power to talk to fishes to sea creatures is so amazing, because he can call upon this army of like whales and sharks and like creatures to help defend Atlantis. And that's the end. Dun, 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 you know, and so, I mean, all in all, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to like call out and stuff, but I thought It was fun.
I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it a lot. I thought, just the ratio of violence to nonviolence. I mean, it's a very violent experience.
Did you think it was that violent? I didn't think it was
I just did. I just thought the combat was, again, it was intricate. It moved well. I love the motion blur they put on stuff when there's certain attack moves. I really feel like they put a lot of the budget into those action sequences. It's pretty cool. But I would give it honestly a B or a B plus.
Yeah, I would say B, maybe B minus as far as they're concerned. It's not my favorite. There are others that have been, like the Assault on Arkham, Flashpoint for me was really good. The Red Hood was excellent. Right. I'm trying to think of which one was my favorite. I think that Red Hood might be close.
Yeah.
Or Flashpoint. There's a bunch of others. Son of Batman was pretty good. But none of these, straight to DVD. Wonder Woman was one of my favorite. They did two Green Lanterns, which the second one, I think, was better than the first one. Mm-hmm. The Green Lanterns were pretty good. And there have been some that were just terrible. Like, I thought Superman, Batman, Public Enemies was just terrible. But, all in all, these tend to be things that, I really enjoy watching. As I said in the beginning, I buy them all. So there must be something, whether it's nostalgia or my love of the characters or my interest to see what they do with them in animation. And I dig them. And I also really dig the TV stuff like Young Justice. I don't know if you ever watched that.
No.
And actually, my daughter and I are watching the CGI Green Lantern thing on Netflix, and she loves it. So, which surprised me. So, I actually kind of like that too. I don't think it's like greatest thing they've ever done, but it's fun enough to watch with your kids. So, So I think DC, they do a good job with their animated stuff. It could be better.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But it could be a whole lot worse. And this is the one area that I think Marvel really needs to, step up their game as far as what they're doing with their animated stuff. So I think DC still kind of owns the roost on that, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's not the moneymaker. It really, direct to DVD. It's a very niche type thing. And I'm glad that someone's doing it.
Absolutely.
I don't think Marvel's going to amp up more than what they've got going on.
Probably not.
Those are tough to watch. I've watched a couple, Hulk versus Wolverine. I was just falling asleep, or Hulk versus Thor.
I actually liked that one. I thought the animation was
pretty
good.
Dislike it. I was just going to bed on it. I was just whereas the DC stuff to me is just very, it's just more layered. I feel like there's more thought put into it. I really like the DC stuff.
Yeah, I really like the DC stuff too, and I'm probably going to still, keep buying them and stuff. And unless something goes completely off the rails, I still have an interest in them. And I think that the stories are, superhero-y enough, solid enough, that it really hits my superhero fanboy button, which, I don't buy the regular books anymore. So this will have to be the thing that, this and the Flash and the Marvel movies. And as unfortunate as it is for me to say, I'm pretty much just buying trades and, whenever I get a chance, but I'm not a regular buyer. So whenever these things show up, I think it's worth checking them out, at least renting them, why
Absolutely.
Not? And no, I think the next one, we should all get together. We should watch, well, not get together. Obviously it's hard for us, but we should watch the Wonder Woman one and talk about that one.
Yeah. And isn't Batman versus Robin coming up?
Yeah. Batman versus Robin is coming. Have you seen Son of Batman?
No.
Yeah, because Son of Batman, I'll lend them to you. I'll lend them to you. Son of Batman is the prequel to Batman versus Robin.
Right.
So
I read those Grant Morrison books.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're based off of those. So
they're
if you've
great.
Read them.
Yeah.
Cool. Fantastic. All right.
Great.
Well, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy analysis of Justice League, Throne of Atlantis. And I am Christian Horn, and I am here with Ian Scheller. And thanks for joining us. Hopefully we will be here soon with another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Take care, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time.